It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Welcome to On the Front Porch. Hi, this is Kyle Bauer, and it's my privilege to be able to visit with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction just outside El Paso, Texas. It was my honor a few years ago to film the Santa Teresa import-export station with the cattle crossing from Mexico into the United States and horses crossing from the United States into Mexico. Well, now they have built a livestock auction at the same facility, and we're visiting with Bilo. Thank you for being with us, Bilo.
Yes, Kyle. Thank you.
Now, how did you come to be involved with the import-export station and the auction facility?
I'm going to go back a few years when they first had the idea of building an export-import facility here in Santa Teresa. And that was back in 1989. They were still crossing. They were checking the animals back in Juarez, and they were crossing them through railroad cars. And in 1990, Governor Bruce King from New Mexico and Governor Barrio, Francisco Barrio, got together and came up with the idea of trying to build an import-export facility for livestock. And during that time, Charlie Crowder was the owner of the land in Santa Teresa, where the import-export facility sits right now. And he donated that land for the whole purpose of building that port. And during that time, my dad was a really good friends with Charlie Crowder and many other guys that were involved in the decision of trying to make this the port. And in 1991, that's when they finally agreed to do the port. And the whole process was signed down in Casas Grandes at our place when the import export facility, they finally agreed on it. So then on after they opened in 92, 91, late 91, I believe it was late 91 or 92, and we've been the family, we've been members of the cattle growers of Chihuahua since 1930, since it first opened, I believe. Not when it first opened, but it was back in 1937 so we've been members of the Cattlemen's Association out of Chihuahua since then. So ever since then, we've been associated with the cattle growers.
So the facility, how was it funded on building that? Because it's an extensive facility. Tell us about the capacities on both sides of the border and who funded the building of it.
To be a member of the cattle growers of Chihuahua, there's a fee, an annual fee, and they took several of those fees to fund the facility, and there was a subsidy by the state of Chihuahua, which helped fund the project, and then the federal government came in too, and so it was part of the federal, state, and the cattle growers at Chihuahua to help fund this.
But it was almost entirely funded from the Mexican side of the border.
That is correct, 100%.
And today it's still owned by the cattle growers.
That is correct, on both sides of the border, yes, sir.
Now, people that haven't seen the videos that I shot a few years ago or have seen the facility, describe what it looks like, the capacities on both sides of the border.
On the U.S. side, you can hold up to about 10,000 head. There's two scales. There's actually now three scales. One, as soon as they cross the border, there's one scale. And then after they sort the cattle, there's two scales, one on the east side and one on the west. And then you got the offices, which the border buyers have their offices in that building. And then you got the custom brokers as well, and then you got the administrative offices. And on the Mexican side, it's a mirror image of the U.S. side on the Mexican side. The Mexican side can hold up to about 13, 14,000 head, which is divided by east and west. The west cattle are cattle from other states other than Chihuahua. If they're coming from further south of Mexico, they're going to have to go to the west side. And if you're from Chihuahua, which means they're tick-free, or Sonora, which is another state that's tick-free, they can go to the east side. And on the Mexican side, that's where USDA does all their inspections. They have their office, and that's where they dip the cattle, and that's where they inspect them and scratch them and get all their health papers before they can cross the border.
Yeah, one thing I want people to understand on the USDA inspection, they are put through a chute one at a time, and they are inspected animal by animal.
That is correct. Before they go into that squeeze chute, the vet, the port vet, which is Dr. Howe, he will go outside and inspect that lot and make sure there's no cripples, make sure there's no open wounds. And if there is, he'll mark them with a paintball gun. So the inspectors, once they go into the chute, the inspectors can know which one is the one that the vet inspected. Once they go into the squeeze chute, and that's where they have to, they got hands-on with the animal, make sure that the ear tags do match the paperwork that was sent from the TB test and the brucellosis test that was done prior of showing up to these pens.
Yes, so before they are actually brought into the station, there is a process that has to be involved prior to that on getting the cattle allowed into the station.
That is correct. That is correct. And the way that goes is every single animal in the state of Chihuahua has a ear tag, a number that goes with that producer, that goes with a ranch, that goes with a county. And with that number, that's telling you how many head that producer has, how many where the county is at, where the ranch is at. And that ID of that animal or that herd is given by the federal government, which is SAGARPA, which is the counterpartner of USDA. So once that's done, that producer has to register himself as an exporter. Once he's registered as an exporter to export the animals to the U.S., then he'll have to schedule a vet visit to do the TB test, and he would have to say how many head and approximately the age on those animals.
Well,
that schedule will probably take 2 weeks for them to do all the scheduling of the TB test. So once that's done, then he'll schedule it, let's say, for a Monday. They'll go, they'll gather the animals. The vet will go out there, put another ear tag on them, which is a TB deal, and that ear tag has to match that yellow ID from the federal government to the brand of the producer, to the ranch, to the county, so there you can keep track of those animals. Once that's done, 3 days later, he'll come back and do the checkup on the TB, make sure everything's negative. And if there's a reactor to the test, then they will have to retest the whole lot.
You know, obviously, from what you've told us, there is a great deal of time and trouble and expense with exporting cattle to the U.S., so the market must be significantly better in the U.S. than to stay on the Mexican market.
That is correct, but there's two things here. First, the exchange rate has to be good, and the time frame on how they get paid, because you know sometimes they get 15 to 20 days to get paid down there, and it might be quicker to get paid over here, and they're getting paid in dollars, and then they can turn around and with the exchange rate they'll get an extra. They'll get paid a little bit. Well, they'll get some extra more pesos just because on the exchange rate.
Well, we're visiting with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction. He was the manager of the import-export station for a number of years. I always find this very fascinating. Join us more after the break for more on the Front Porch. Welcome back to more on the Front Porch. I'm visiting with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction just outside El Paso, Texas. We're talking about exporting cattle, live feeder cattle, from Mexico into the United States through those facilities that have been there for many, many years. Bilo, want people to understand what an average ranch in Chihuahua, the state of Chihuahua, looks like. Can you tell us what those ranches would look like and what the cattle look like?
You know, most of the, and I'm going to talk about the state of Chihuahua, which, you know, that's what I'm mostly familiar with. 80% of the people that own the ranches in Chihuahua are all deeded, paid for. Most of the ranches are from generations, and some of them go way back to five generations. They are mostly, they can go anywhere from 5,000 acres all the way up to about 170 to 200,000 acres. There's a big country. The land, I mean, the northwestern part of Chihuahua, there's a lot of that grama grass, toboso, I mean, very, very good cattle country. And if you go down past Chihuahua City towards Parral, there's some really, really good ranches where the water's running most of the year, but versus the northwestern, it's more of a desert type of a ranch, but with really good grasses. And if you go to the east of the state towards Presidio, Texas, now that's some really, really deserty country.
Mm-hmm. And so with those size of ranches then, how many head would the average rancher have for sale annually?
You're probably looking anywhere on an average probably from 40 to 47 acres to a cow.
Okay, so they would have from 100 to 1,000 head they would sell annually.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, and the reason I want to bring that up is I was amazed when I was at the station that it looked like to me that fellas pretty much brought their entire calf herd at one time, which meant they had males, they had females, and they had what all of us do in the United States, three sizes of cattle. And so all that has to be merchandised through the facility, no matter if you have male or female. Now tell us about the females crossing the border, special procedure for them.
For the females, it's the same procedure as the steers, but the only difference, they do have to be castrated. Mm-hmm. And in order to be castrated, there's only certain vets that are certified by USDA to do that, and it takes a little bit longer to It's a little bit longer process for the females, for the heifers, to be exported because of the process of the spaying.
Every female that crosses the border is spayed.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That is correct.
And that actually has some value to buyers on the U.S. side because they don't have to worry about them coming in heat.
Right. So. And it's just another, it's one of those regulations that USDA made, you know, in order that you couldn't cross any breeding heifers to the U.S. They would have to go, they would have to be spayed.
Now, it was my impression that when the cattle crossed from the Mexican side to the U.S. side, they would pass in lots, and no personnel crossed that border. In other words, they'd drive the cattle up to the border in a lane, and then the U.S. personnel would take them from there. But all the sorting took place on the U.S. side.
That is correct. They'll sort them by size. Sometimes they'll sort them by genetics. You know, it just depends on what kind of a deal you made with the buyer.
And many times, were those cattle already priced before they crossed the border?
In most cases, yes. In most cases, before the auction was started, usually you would have a price or a committed price, and that's the reason you were bringing your cattle. It's a very small percentage of people that come without knowing what the value of their animals are.
But I was surprised, as many cattle that crossed the border on a daily basis, there was a relatively small number of buyers or brokers that were buying the cattle. I would say less than 20.
That is correct. You're probably looking anywhere from 7 to 13 buyers.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had to have these agreements ahead of time, and you're talking about everything from a 400-pound heifer to an 800-pound steer, and that particular buyer, and you might have 7 out of this sort of one size, and you might have 50 of the other. Well, the buyer has to put together truckload lots, and sometimes there's not more than one guy that's looking for that particular size and grade of cattle.
You know, everything before the auction was started, and they still use, they base everything at 300 pounds.
Okay.
And before the market really started going up and down, it was a rule of thumb. It was just based at 300 pounds with a 10-cent slide. But now they've been using based at 300 with a 20, with a 25, all the way up to a 35-cent slide. So it just so that's why now, especially now, if they know they're not going to the auction, they rather have a for sure price before they come to the border, because once they start doing those 20, 25, and 35-cent slides, you know, it really got down to the, you know, especially on those feeders and the yearlings. I mean, they were losing a lot of money, you know, because a lot of people didn't, a lot of them sellers didn't really understood the slide until they actually saw the sort and saw the invoice.
So obviously your facility is owned by the Cattlemen's Association in Chihuahua. And they paid a huge amount to build that facility. They obviously felt like there was a need for open pricing, because then they paid to build a sale barn adjacent to that facility.
You know, this they had it in mind since 2001. But back in 2001, and I was part of the trying to get this together back in 2001. And at the time, it was really too expensive. I'm not saying it wasn't expensive now, but the way they did it, you know, they had the land next to the import export facility, and they put the land, and they did a contract with their partners out of Oklahoma and Wichita Falls to try to get this started and running. And the way they did it, the cattlemen's, they did a contract for 15 years, and the Cattlemen's Association out of Chihuahua put the money down for the building, and the partners did all. They're going to do all the administrative part, and they did the pens and all the regulations that USDA required from packers and stockers. Everything that USDA, anything federally that has to do with the auction, is part. That's what the partners are taking care of.
Well, I would assume that once those cattle cross the border, they're treated just like U.S. cattle from there on, because any of the branding of them that designates them as Mexican cattle, all the spaying, all the dipping for lice and ticks, all the inspection takes place on the Mexican side. So once it gets to the U.S. side, your sale barn probably isn't a great deal different than a sale barn up here in Kansas.
It's run just like a Kansas, Oklahoma City, Clovis auction. It's the same thing.
Well,
it's the same rules, same thing.
So, how long has the sale barn been in operation then?
We started, our first sale was in January the 21st of 2017.
Well, we'll talk about more after the break on how it's going, but how far is the sale barn from where the cattle cross the border?
We're no longer than 100 yards.
So the cattle cross the border, and they could at that point take an immediate left and head right to your sale barn.
That's exactly how it goes.
Now, I assume all the feeding pens, though, or if they have to be held for several days prior to the sale, they would be fed in the import-export facility?
No, sir. We got our own pens down here. Once they're consigned to the auction, we'll receive those animals. Because once it's consigned to the auction, we have to let New Mexico and USDA and everybody that needs to be that needs to be part of the auction. We need to know them. We need to let them know exactly whose cattle we're receiving, how many head, and all the paperwork that comes with the animals.
We're visiting with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction just outside El Paso, Texas. Join us after the break for more on the Front Porch. Welcome back to more on the Front Porch. We're visiting with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction just outside El Paso, Texas, crossing cattle for many, many years from Chihuahua into New Mexico. Bilo, when I was down there several years ago shooting some video, it was almost a peak in the number of cattle that were crossing from Mexico into the United States. After that time, there was drought on both sides of the border that set in, and the numbers came down significantly.
Yes, sir.
And so can you give us some idea what the numbers, you know, maybe were at its peak and what they are now?
The most that they've crossed here has been 550-some thousand.
In one
and,
year?
The lowest has probably been in 220,000.
And where are we in today? Are we in the middle of that or near the lower end?
On average, you know, for the last probably 5 years, they've been anywhere from 340 to 380.
And are those numbers going up because it started to rain, or are you still in a drought in that area?
You know, most states, they're still in a drought. Chihuahua has been in a drought for probably the last 4 to 5 years. You know, they've had some rain, but the ranches have really been suffering these last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And this year, actually this last month, you know, it's been a good year for that northwestern part of Chihuahua. The southern part, around from the middle down, I mean they got a problem right now with the drought.
Okay, well, I was just going to ask that because, you know, I'd seen Arizona and Nevada in the U.S. Had been getting rains, but that doesn't cross over onto your side. It goes north.
North, yes, sir.
When is your rainy season?
It usually starts around the 15th of July towards the 24th of August. You know, like if we don't get any rain by the 15th of August, we won't make any grass for the winter.
Okay, and so it appears you're kind of in that cycle this year of no rain this year.
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
So what precipitated the cattle producers in Chihuahua to go to the additional expense of building an auction barn?
Given another option to the producer. Have another option. You know, because you have 7 of 13 buyers here at the border, and it's really not an open market. You really should, it's a private treaty. And the reality of not knowing exactly what your cattle are worth and not having an open market, that's what drove the association to make an auction. And to give an opportunity to those buyers that really want to buy, that really like those Mexican cattle and want to buy them directly from the producer, your best bet will be here at the auction.
Well, and there's so many different sizes and sort. You know, it really does lend itself pretty well to an auction situation.
For sure, you know, because there's a lot of the times, you know, if you were a buyer in the U.S. and you were trying to buy some Mexican cattle because you like the way they work and the way they handle, and you contact some of the buyers and you were interested in buying, you know, a set of ones and a half. Well, there's always that fly on the milk, you know, you don't like that 2% or the 1% right, that you don't like. Now you have the option of coming here to the auction and buying exactly what you want.
Well, and it isn't necessarily that you don't like them as much as you don't have the orders for that.
Right.
But the other guy might. So how has it been going? You've been open more or less a little over 6 months. Have people been accepting of the new situation? Because certainly the old import-export station was pretty ingrained into a lot of people's marketing plans.
You know, it's we just finished our 20th auction this last Saturday, and it's something really new for the producer in Chihuahua. They're not very familiar with it. There's a lot of people that are still hesitating because they don't quite understand the system or how it works, and mainly because you're buying the animal or you're selling the animal at their weight, not based at 300 pounds like they're used to. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really what the auction is eventually going to do. It's going to change a culture of how they were selling their animals to now sell them directly at what their way. And it hasn't been easy, you know, but a lot of people are being very, very receptive of what we're doing here. And they really like it, especially the producer.
Has it affected the prices that the brokers pay the guys that are just going through the import-export station and buying direct?
Well, now since we've been open, you know, it's an open market. They know exactly what the animals are going for. So now the producer, now at least they have something to compare it to. Now they got another option. Now they have a leverage to say, well, you know, if you can't pay me this, you know, I can go now to the auction.
And can you, for instance, let's say you have that small group of 600-pound heifers that's like 8 head of 600-pound heifers that doesn't match anything else you're doing. After you sort at the import-export station, can you drive them over to the auction to just sell a portion at the auction?
Yes, sir. You can sell from 1 head to 2,000, 3,000.
So you literally might sell 2/3 of your cattle direct and then drive the other third literally right next door to the auction to be sold at the auction.
It hasn't happened right now, and I don't think if you're dealing with a producer, I don't think we'll see that. If you're dealing with a true producer, if you're dealing with a person that puts cattle together in Chihuahua, I see that happening in the future. But for right now, I haven't seen that right now.
One thing I was surprised, and we see a lot of Mexican cattle in our listening area, but certainly when I was watching the cattle cross, they didn't look much different than the cattle that I saw coming out of the southeast part of the United States, about the same breeds of cattle, about the same quality of cattle. And quite honestly, at that time, there was a number of ranchers that came to the U.S. side to settle for their cattle. And the ranchers really didn't look and act that much different than U.S. ranchers. It just, they were speaking Spanish, though, instead of English.
That is correct. You know, and we got to remember, we got to look at the industry, especially the cattle industry, as a mirror image. And the commerce between Mexico and the U.S. in the last 15, 20 years has really, really gone up, especially in the genetics. You know, when Mr. Raul Tellez was in the Department of Agriculture here in New Mexico, we had several auctions promoting the genetics of New Mexico and from several counties of Texas, you know, to promote them in Chihuahua. And I don't have the exact number how many bulls and heifers we sold to Chihuahua, but we started that in 2001 or 2002, all the way up to about 2007. And you can really, if those animals didn't have an M brand on their hip, on some of them, you couldn't tell they were from Mexico because that genetics is really, 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 really good.
Well, and I will say on most of them, when I was there for that 2 days, there was very few cattle that wouldn't have matched up similarly to the United States. And, there are knotheads, but you know what? There's knotheads in the United States, too, that aren't the kind of quality that any breeder was hoping for, but that's kind of the luck of the draw that happens sometimes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we've talked about across the border how the how dry it is. What about the law and order? You know, there's certainly been an issue, or there was an issue, with the ranchers, their safety, with U.S. producers going to Mexico to look at cattle. How is the safety these days in Chihuahua?
You know, if we go back to 2010, 2011, all the way up to about 2013, things were really, really rough, not only in Chihuahua, but in the whole country. But it's slowed down nowadays. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying that, you know, we're going back to it is what it used to be. You know, you just got to be careful if you're going down there. You know, just take your precautions like any other place. You know, and don't be where you're not supposed to be during the night. And during the day, you're pretty much, you know, safe. I want to say safe, but you know, you're better off driving during the day. And yes, there were some ranchers that during those years, that from 2010 to 2013, that the families left because it was pretty bad. But now it's changed a whole bunch.
We're visiting with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction just outside El Paso, Texas. Join us for the final segment of On the Front Porch after this message. Welcome back to the final segment of On the Front Porch. This is Kyle Bauer visiting with Bilo Wallace. He is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction just outside El Paso, Texas. Bilo, you came from a ranch in Mexico. Does your family continue to be involved with ranching directly?
Yes, sir. It's a cow-calf ranch. We've been in the business my brother and I are the fourth generation on that ranch.
And tell us about the cattle and the terrain where your ranch is.
Our ranch is 163 miles northwest from the border of Santa Teresa. We own close to 72,000 acres on it. We're running just about 1,100 mama cows, and our base herd was a Hereford with Angus, and now around 82% of our cows are black or black baldies, and everything that we produce, we export to the United States.
And what are your cows bred to?
If they're straight Herefords to an Angus, if they're Angus, we have the Hereford bulls on them.
So your ranch does market through there. Those cattle are trucked then from your ranch to the station.
Yes, sir. We truck them. And it just depends. Before, we used to sell them. We used to wait either October or March to sell a herd. But now what we're doing, since the auction opened up, we might send, if we got 60 ready, we'll send 60. If we got 30, we'll send 30. What the way it's helping us personally, that now we can sell to have a little bit of a cash flow on a monthly basis for the ranch. Because before, it was just, everything was due on credit, and you would sell your crop and then pay everything at the end of the year, and but now at least we're going to have a little bit more cash flow with the way we're structuring we're running our business now there at the ranch.
Now, do you need to be members of the Cattlemen's Association to sell through the import export station?
Not necessarily. If you're not a member, they will charge you an extra fee to come through there for the service. Mm-hmm. at the Santa Teresa import export facility.
What percentage of cattle would you say are coming through that come from members and or from non-members?
I would probably say that 75% of the cattlemen from Chihuahua are members, and the rest are non-members. And the reason they're non-members is because it's either their first time or they're in the process of becoming a member.
Now, there's a number of places, though. You are not the only place people can import-export to the United States. How many other stations, and how does yours stack up against those?
Well, in Arizona has three places. New Mexico has two, which is Columbus and Santa Teresa. And then Texas, I believe, has four of them.
And so how do you rank with those? Are you average or small or big? Or?
Santa Teresa is the biggest one of all of them. Of all the U.S.-Mexican border cattle crossings, Santa Teresa is the biggest one.
Are all of them of similar design?
No. If you go east of El Paso, it changes because of the Rio Grande. So in order to cross your animals, they have to truck them. Hmm. They'll come from the ranch to the border pens. They'll unload, and then when they're ready to be inspected, or after they're inspected, they'll truck them again up to the U.S.
And is there a set of pens on the U.S. side they're immediately offloaded to, or they go directly to the buyer at that point?
No, there's another set of pens where they're unloaded right across the border.
Okay. So on the trend, we've heard recently with NAFTA talks, is that of concern at all, or does the producers in that area really, it doesn't pertain to this event?
No, there is a concern to everybody. When I say everybody, that's anybody that's involved in the import export business, there is a concern. Until that comes up, there's no way of knowing what's going to happen.
In the United States, the average livestock or cattle producer is in their upper 50s. And they're not very large. In your country, do you see the average age similar, or is there an evolution to younger people?
Very, very similar.
Okay.
You know, there's a, especially, I want to say my generation, I'm 39 years old. There's very few people that were my age that were still involved in the industry. And if we are, most of the people that I know, they're not 100% involved in the cattle industry. And it's pretty sad, but that's reality.
So what will happen to those ranches then at that point? Will they be sold to non-ranching ownership that's run by hired people?
I think we're going to see more of that, and I think we're going to start seeing more of leasing the ranches to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very sad to say, you know, we still... my family still lives in the ranch. That's our only home, and we've been there since 1937 at that house. You know, when my granddaddy bought that place there, and I don't think there's more than 10 families still living at the ranch in the state of Chihuahua.
You know, I'll remind people that your name is Wallace. It's not a Hispanic name. So your grandfather was probably not native to Mexico?
My great-granddaddy came from Scotland in 1880, 1890.
Directly to Mexico?
No, he came, he homesteaded in Chillicothe, Ohio. And we really don't know how he ended up where we're at. Because all the papers got... burned and lost, but he was directly from Scotland, and his name was William Wallace. My granddaddy was William Wallace, and I'm the fourth William Wallace.
And that's why they don't call you William; they call you Belo.
Belo, yes.
Okay, that's you got to keep them straight. Huh?
Yes, sir.
So, as we see this evolution and the sale barn opening, if I came back in 5 years, what do you think I'm going to see at the import-export station and the auction barn? What do you see as the trend?
I see the trend happening exactly what happened to Oklahoma City, where they had the commission companies back in the 60s, that eventually they went back, they opened up the auction, and slowly it started turning, most of the cattle started going to the auction. And that's what I hope to see. In 5 years, that we'll be running most of the cattle through this auction.
You know, I'm remiss, Ian, that you mentioned that a lot of the management is coming from Oklahoma and Texas, sale barn management folks. Can you tell us more about how that process is working and how that's evolving?
Yes, sir. One of the partners, he has an auction barn there in Apache, Oklahoma. He's been in the business for 35 years. And when I started talking to them about this, they saw the interest and they saw, you know, the need for this. So it's hard right now because they're having to fly here every week, but it's working out. You know, it's we're working here for the producer. We're working here for the buyer, you know, and for the buyer, if they're really interested in those Mexican cattle, I mean, this would be their place to buy directly from the producer.
Oh, that's something we need to bring out. If I wanted to come to your auction, I could buy cattle just like I could at Oklahoma City.
Yes, sir. The same way. Yes, sir. And we encourage, you know, anyone out there, you know, who are interested in Mexican cattle to give us a call or come by and visit us so they can see the building and see what, you know, the way we run things. And if they got any questions, you know, feel free to give us a call.
Visiting with Belo Wallace, he is the manager of the Santa Teresa Livestock Auction at Santa Teresa, just west of El Paso, Texas. You've been listening to On the Front Porch, this is Kyle Bauer reporting.